Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Following the resignation of Nursultan Nazarbayev, a lot is happening in Kazakhstan. On one hand, the country is preparing to elect its second leader since the independence. On the other hand, despite the crackdown, a growing number of people are taking streets in protest. What's that they are angry about? What does the timing tell us and where things are possibly headed from here? So there is a lot to talk about, and to discuss all these, I'm joined by Reid Standish, an Astana-based journalist working for the Foreign Policy, Leila Zulikha Mahmoudova, a political activist, gender and education consultant based in Almaty, Bruce Fanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi, and Bruce is joining us from Prague. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you for having me.
Hi.
Very nice to have you. Yeah. Okay, so Reid, let's start with you and with today's events. So what has been happening where you are?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm up here in Nursultan where things were a little more quiet today, but there were protests again down in Almaty. Again, a series of arrests of protesters. And we also saw a bunch of news sites get banned today, you know, amongst others, you know, Vlast, The Village, Hola News. And I think this shows that as the election is getting closer, the June 9th election, you know, the authorities are starting to maybe get a little bit worried about the amount of momentum that's starting to be gained of people coming out onto the streets.
Yeah, authorities seem to be worried, but activists are also angry for some reason. Leila, you are among them. Tell us what you have been doing today.
So actually, today I was not in the streets because I had my human rights course. But the thing is that my friends were in the meetings today, and some of them, they reported that like 5,000 to 6,000 people were marching in different parts, and all of them were again gathering just to protest the current situation.
Okay, Bruce, yeah. So looking into this from abroad, what do you see is happening?
Well, clearly there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the upcoming elections and the fact that, you know, there are people out there that don't really feel there's much of a choice for them anymore, that the whole transfer of power has already been agreed to at the top among the elites, and that there's, you know, even though they're going to hold an election exactly 1 month from today, it seems to be fairly meaningless. And so, you know, people are coming out, and there's some clever protest actions going on here. You know, I mean, we've seen a lot of the stuff on the streets, but some of the other things that are that people have been doing, statements that are put on signs or not put on signs, have actually taken on or presented some serious political challenges for the Kazakh authorities, which they have not risen to, I'd have to say. I mean, they seem to be taken by surprise by the actions that continue despite warnings. But the methods, the inventiveness of some of these people, I think, has also taken the authorities by surprise.
Yeah, definitely. We would like to talk about that more. Leila, before that, it is kind of coming together, like these protests and the elections, but what's that you guys really want?
First of all, we want to like send message to not to the government, but to the people about the elections, that we should be active in forthcoming elections, and we should do everything to show that we are here and we have a choice. So actually the campaign and like these methods that we use like currently, they are really different from the things that were, of course, like in the past. And I think that even this like a hashtag activism that became really widespread in the activism that we have now, like hashtags among them is I have a choice, you cannot run away from the truth for like rightful elections. Those hashtags are really widespread across the internet now. And it all started in Marathon, which was in April 21st in Almaty. It was annual city marathon, and several activists, they showed the banner with the slogan, you cannot run away from the truth in Russian, and two hashtags, like I have a choice, and in Russian and Kazakh. And from that time on, like everything, I guess, really actively started. And first of all, the thing is that like activists were detained by the police, and like there was the persecution, which was really like not rightful. And we all felt that even in this very like when we show our opinion in a very say mild manner, just showing the banner, we can't be abused from the government's power. And that's why we should be even more active in order to support at least ourselves, and to show that if you have no interest in our opinion, then it means maybe we didn't show it in a popular manner before, so now we can, we should do it. So the forthcoming elections, they will not be the same as they were like 30 years in a row by now, when nothing was clear and transparent, but everything was very usual scenario when we already knew what will be the result. There were, of course, lots of sarcasm about why should we spend this, you know, budget money on those elections, all those campaigns, when we already know what will be the result of the campaign and of the elections.
Kind of curious, this banner, which was kind of the starting point of all this, what was that about? Yeah, you can't run away from the truth. What does that mean?
So, you know, there's like a very interesting slogan, I would say, because the activists that thought up this slogan, they were very inventive, I guess, because this banner was placed on marathon, right? So the people were running. Literally running. And they were running by this banner, and they saw this slogan. You cannot run away from the truth. And hashtag is I have a choice. So it was about action that is happening on that day, like running. But at the same time, it was about the situation like in country as a whole, that like the elections are coming and we all know what it is happening to be. And but we are still being ignorant to this, you know, trying to, I don't know, be active in marathon, in other events, be very, I don't know, maybe to have other types of fun, but not facing the truth that like elections are coming and we don't have a choice in those elections.
Yeah, I can see you guys are prepared this time, Leila. Let's see where we are headed with this. So, Reid, what is your understanding of what's happening? I hear kind of mixed messages coming out from this entire protests. People are talking about the elections, about the transparency, about the truth, about unemployment, you name it. What's that really they want? Let's take a Reid's point on this.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, from what I'm understanding is you're right. It is a very broad message. And it is, but that's because, in order to get enough people under one umbrella, you have to bring in people from all different sorts of walks of life. But I think that people are united under, you know, one sort of message, which is, you know, to have an actual free and fair election, which is something that's never actually happened in Kazakhstan before. And so I'd say that's sort of the broad thing. But I'd say what also stands out right now at this moment compared to past times is, you know, a lot of these protests are, they're a lot more sophisticated. They're certainly more social media savvy. They know how to get resonance, you know, not only within the country, but also internationally, which also goes a long way in terms of putting pressure on the government, because the Kazakh government does care a lot about what is being said about it in the world. It's also, it's very, very self-conscious of its image around the world. So it's a very interesting moment, I think, right now, because you have this contrast of this, you know, the young generation of Kazakhs, you know, these are the people who are the only generation to grow up in an independent Kazakhstan. They don't have that same sort of baggage tied to the Soviet legacy as other people in the country do. And so you contrast that generation, which has a very different outlook on the world and grew up in a Kazakhstan of, you know, rising wages, rising living conditions, and people's expectations have been raised. And now they expect more. They expect, okay, it's not just enough to say, you're the government, you can give us a livelihood, and that's enough. No, we want a choice. We want to have a say in the direction of our country. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, especially as now we're going through this transition of, I mean, I guess in a lot of ways, Nazarbayev is still calling the shots. He's still the man in charge of lots of pretty much everything. I mean, his title is pretty large. But as we start to see this transition into Tokayev, who is someone who, you know, his power still flows through Nazarbayev, right, but he doesn't really have the kind of personal legitimacy that Nazarbayev has as this founding father and, you know, leader of the nation type figure. And, you know, Kazakhstan doesn't really have institutions that you can fall back on. So what kind of legitimacy does Tokayev really have moving forward? You know, especially as these, you know, calls for protests get louder from the people. So it's going to be really interesting to see how these two kind of forces collide.
Yeah. And also Bruce Reid was talking about this broad umbrella, which brings all these people together. So what's the scope and size of this activity? Like how many people are we talking about? And what are the cities these protests are taking place in? And also, what does this tell you?
I think it's impossible to put a number on how many people are involved in this, but certainly it's widespread. And this is something, of course, which is going to concern the Kazakh authorities immensely, is because this, it might be centered in the big cities of the east, in Nur-Sultan and Almaty. But you know, both on May 1st and today, there were reports coming in from Shymkent and Aktobe and places like that. So, I mean, it's spread really around the country. It might not be as large or dynamic, but it's certainly widespread in terms of Kazakhstan, even though the numbers might not be huge. Now, is there, you know, I mean, Reid made a good point. There's a lot of different interests at work here. So how do you get all these people behind one or two issues and get them to unify? That's, you know, that's going to be tough. There are some social issues, things like that, that I suppose you could, people can latch on to and add their own grievances on the side, but keeping focused on two or three things. I would mention, though, that I think a lot of this is because, okay, when Nazarbayev resigned at the, you know, in March, there was obviously, this was a shock for a lot of people. But in transitions that we've seen in other Central Asian countries, there's the expectation that the new leadership means that there's going to be some kind of change in the country. And you know, with Nazarbayev still alive and still having really all the power, and Tokayev is repeating again and again that he's going to hold to Nazarbayev's path, we have a change of leadership which doesn't represent any kind of change of course or any hope for a change of course.
Yeah.
And I think this is proving to be the problem in Kazakhstan, is that people are like, it's not so much that they're against new leadership, but they want to know that the leadership is going to do something different that's going to improve their lives.
So you are saying it's like indirectly still Nazarbayev a factor in what's happening today in terms of these protests?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anyone's fooled that he's running the country. You know, I mean, constitutionally, he absolutely is running the country and will be until he dies. You know, so, you know, this election, and let's remember, too, that this election was called rather hastily. There wasn't really a need for this. They could have let this go until the presidential term expired next year and done it, too. But for some reason, they decided they were going to have to do this, you know, on June 9th, 2.5 months after Nazarbayev had stepped down from power. It's sending all the wrong messages to the people that you know, things are not going to change at all, except for the person that calls himself the president. That's the only thing that's going to change. But in fact, he's not even the one in power. And all the policies that are in place today are still going to be in place after June 9th.
Leila, it's not the first time that something like this is happening in terms of protests. But this time, you guys are proving resilient and are sticking together. How this all organization is coming about? Like, you know, you have this protest in Almaty going on, and some people are coming out in Nur-Sultan and some other cities that Bruce mentioned. How this entire organization works? Like, are you guys connected to each other? I mean, what I'm saying is there any organization behind it?
So, no organization behind it. Like in the activism that we have now, in the activism that is under, let's say, umbrella of those hashtags, like you cannot run away from the truth or you have a choice. Those like people who are actively like involved in the situation, they go to the meetings, they go to the courts, they actively present their ideas in their social media. They want to speak up. those people, the number is organically evolving, and there is no formal institutions or organizations that are gathering these people under the umbrella, let's say, of this hashtag. So, and I think that, let's say, in this all the activism that we have now, I can see two groups of people. The first group, the group of, like, which is I'm involved in, and I, as I said, like, mostly we are young activists, and we want just what we really, like, thriving for. This is the choice. Like, we want choice. We want this power to govern the country as citizens, you know, to, like, to have this choice in elections, to be able to vote for our president, for local leaders, for anyone who can be, like, elected. So this is the thing that we want. But there is another group of people who are also actively involved in the meetings and other things, and this group of people are led by a leader, Mukhtar Ablyazov, who is actively opposite to the current government, and he escaped the country like many years ago, and now he cannot come back to the country because here he will be detained and persecuted, and he is blamed for his corruption in the country, and he is actively gathering people through internet channels like messengers, social media, and he even formed his political party, like online one, and he is really actively shaking moods of people and trying to gather people opposite to the government, and trying to seduce them with, in my opinion, very unrealistic promises, you know, to change the country and to make it really different. And all the people who are in the first group, like those young activists, we do not want to be involved with the things that this political party do, with Mukhtar Ablyazov and everything that he is doing, because we do not trust this person, we do not trust all the promises he makes, and we really believe that he's a corrupt one, and he just needs the power, and that's it. So, and Mukhtar Ablyazov was claiming that several activists from the I Have a Choice campaign are his colleagues or protégés, you know, that he's connected to them, but he's not. He was lying. So, and those people, those activists, friends of mine, they were like reporting back on their social media that they are not connected with this political party and Mukhtar Ablyazov anyways, and we don't want to be associated with this person anyhow.
So no, it's an, important clarification. Yeah, important clarification, Leila. So if I ask you to name a leader for what's happening in today's Kazakhstan in terms of the protesters, who that person would be? Is there any leader?
There is no, like, clear one leader who is formally or somehow, I don't know, in any official terms named himself or other people name this person a leader. But I think that it is just essential to understand, like, to know that, like, people like Ася Tulesova and Vibarus Tolumbekov, who were detained for showing this banner, you cannot run away from the truth in marathon, and started all the things, are like leaders for many people, like for us, first of all, for activists, and for those people who maybe they were not that much interested in the politics and in elections, but after this situation, they became more active and they were inspired by this action. That's why, like, the inspirers and the leaders of the campaign and of the activism, I guess in many ways, like Ася and Bibarus. But also I can name that there are other people who were detained in May 1st in the meeting. And most of them are in Astana too, not only in Almaty. Ася and Bibarus are from Almaty. And those people in Astana, I guess, like Alimjan Izbasarov and others, became inspirers for their local communities and for, like, wider people. So, and I guess the thing is that with this campaign or with this activism, there is no need for one leader. I guess, as Asia said in her yesterday's interview to one of the news portals, that we now need activism or movements where there are lots of leaders in for their communities, for their cities, for their organizations that could have, maybe we all have the same idea, but we're like a very various and there are lots of us. So if something happens to one of us, the others can continue the work, you know, this is the thing.
Bruce, you were earlier talking about the this creative ideas that the protesters are coming out to irritate the authorities, I believe. By now, we all know the man who was dragged by police for holding a blank paper. And now you have a new trend. People are protesting, pretending to be holding signs and are being arrested for doing so. So Kazakhstan has occasionally, Bruce, seen protests like this. But what's there to say about the way authorities are handling this?
They're handling it extremely poorly. You know, I mean, it just looks stupid to arrest somebody for holding a white piece of paper. And it looks even more stupid when you're arresting someone for miming holding something, you know. And but so, like I said, it's very clever on the part of the protesters because, you know, everyone understands kind of what they're where they're going with this, why they're posting these pictures. But then when they're detained, there's absolutely no basis. I mean, you know, when they detained the guy with the just blank piece of paper that he had out there, and admittedly he was talking a lot, you know, it would have been more effective if he hadn't done a monologue before it, I thought. But yeah. You know, they detain him and they bring him down and then find out that they can't really figure out what they're going to charge him with. You know, I mean, what law, what violation did he commit by holding a blank piece of paper? You know, and so it makes the authorities look stupid for doing something like this, you know, and even stupider when they have nothing in their hands at all. You know, so it's very clever on the part of the protesters. If you're following Kazakhstan, you understand what's going on. And it puts the authorities in quite a bind because if they let it go, I suppose they're worried it could spread all over the place. But in the meantime, it looks ridiculous to bring people into police headquarters for something like this.
Yeah.
Well, let me add to this, Muhammad.
Yeah.
Here is the thing that we were discussing this case with a very blank banner and telling that actually this is like a contemporary art or something, you know, not just activism. So, and the thing is that even with the first banner, which was in the marathon, as I said, the slogan there was, you cannot run away from the truth. But police officer in his report, he wrote that the slogan was, leader of the nation is a shame of the nation.
Oh.
Yeah. And when he was in a jury, he said that this was a technical mistake. So that he wrote in this way, because it was obvious that the banner contained other things in it. But when he was asked, why did you write like that the banner contained another slogan, he said, just technical mistake, technical error. I don't know like what he meant. And it is like happening everywhere, that is happening on the jury or with police officers, that they are doing very gullible mistakes and they are very rude. And they, of course, I guess really understand that they have the power, the amount of which can abuse anyone, and they can be okay with this, you know, because like people were not reacting to this before, and now maybe they will not react too. But when we see it like very clear in all of the cases, and when we have this power of social media, when we can record it and post it at the same time, so lots of people can see it, I guess now this cannot stay invisible, or they cannot just no longer abuse with their power. Now we see it, it became visible, now we really cannot tolerate it anymore.
You know, and if I could just jump in one more, because another one that was real powerful was the guy that put the quote from the Constitution up there, that the people are the sole source of power, and was detained for that. And I'm like, you know, I mean, they detained him for writing down a passage from their own Constitution, you know, which is not threatening in any way. And so it makes the situation, the authorities look totally ridiculous.
Yes, it tells me one thing, Reed. Authorities are clearly confused how to respond to this.
Yeah, I think it's largely the product of, I mean, this is what, been 30 years of independent Kazakhstan. There hasn't really been politics, you know, as we even really know it. So how do you, you know, it's usually been you deal with dissent with a heavy fist and you're able to stamp it up. Very tough. So it's kind of interesting to see how they're trying to deal with it now, because you can tell that they have limited tools in their toolbox of how to deal with these very creative forms of protest.
Yeah.
And you know, it's...
And they are...
Sorry, go ahead, Mohammed.
Yeah, I'm saying that, you know, one way of they trying to do is, like, they are censoring internet, I believe, today. Lots of websites being blocked.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm getting a lot of use of my VPN here. You know, even, and it's not just news sites that have been coming under censorship that go offline. You know, I saw some reports of some people losing cellular service, their cell phone carriers just dropping them for a huge amount of time while they've been out in protest areas and sort of targeted zones where you're able to shut off cell access. So it is, it's going to be more authoritarian. And that's sort of what I think is a bit of my prediction, as the authorities, the only real response they have is to crack down even harder, which... In a lot of ways, I mean, it's hard not to imagine that backfiring. It's what we've seen happen in other parts of the world where there's been similar protests like this, especially if the crackdowns become more severe, and especially, like Layla was saying, if they're caught on video and they're able to spread on social media like wildfire. That's actually how you draw more people to a cause. That's how you bring out people who normally were just sitting at home watching. That's how you get them to come out and join this big umbrella. So in a way, it's not a very smart strategy from the Kazakh authorities on this part.
Yeah. Reed, just a very quick follow-up question, and then we have to move on to discuss a little bit about the election process too. So what's that the authorities are really afraid of? I mean, what they are trying to stop from happening?
Well, I mean, obviously, I don't know exactly what they're afraid of. I mean, my personal sort of take and what is based off some of the conversation I've had with people who are in government or used to be in government, especially, is, I mean, I think there's not a lot of confidence in the system that's built here. And I think that there's a fear that it could all come crashing down, and the people who are at the top who have benefited from it lose influence, lose power, lose money, things like that. And so that's how I interpret this, you know, very hard response that we've been seeing over the last few years against dissent, and that I think is going to get even harder during this election period and then continue after the election period. But I think it reflects that this system is very much something that's been built through Nazarbayev. It is Nazarbayev. And there's a deep-seated fear of what happens after him. And nobody really knows.
Yeah.
No one has an answer to that question.
Yeah, so, we are talking about Nazarbayev. One very quick point here. Is there anything Nazarbayev is saying about all this?
I mean, not really. I mean, I think he's tried to stay out of it. I mean, obviously, he gave some remarks when he nominated Tokayev to be the Nur Otan candidate. But, you know, for the most part, I mean, he's sort of staying out of the fray. Yeah. I think they're trying to move forward as quickly as they can. You know, their goal is to try and establish legitimacy for Tokayev and for this whole transition process. And I think that they think that these protests, this kind of growing mood in the country, you know, is a storm that they can sail through.
Leila, very, very, very briefly, you know, with all these creative ideas that you guys are coming up at this time around, so what's next in your toolbox? Where are you headed?
So the closest date for us is June 9th, the elections, and we should be really prepared for it, not only by the actions, by the activism, like events or something, or banners, but we should be technically prepared for looking watching the elections.
What does it mean technically prepared? What do you have in mind?
So the thing is that we know that we are really limited now in the coming elections in our power to vote or in our other rights. So but still the thing that we really can do, even if we couldn't manage preparing candidates, which we really want for this elections, still we have this power to watch the election process. And now many organizations and activists are going to the courses, listening to the courses or teaching how to watch elections, how to watch the process of where citizens vote and all the votes are kept and the number of votes is like shown. So now we want to be part of this process and watch how it happens and to make this process more transparent and of course to show the real result.
Okay.
You know, not the result that someone like Nazarbayev, Tokayev or other people in the circle want.
Okay, so this is a really good time to get into the election discussion. So this is what is happening as we speak on the ground, as Kazakhstan is preparing for a presidential election. So what is happening in the election front? We will continue the discussion talking about this and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Rich Standish, Nur Sultan based journalist. I'm still not used to this name. So, Reid works for foreign policy, and Leila Zuleika Mahmudova, a political activist based in Almaty, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog. Kishlok Owazi, Bruce is joining us from Prague, and I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing latest wave of protests in Kazakhstan in the light of an upcoming elections. Now, all this is happening at a time when Kazakhstan is preparing for presidential elections, a crucial election, I should say, given the fact that the country is going to elect its second leader since the independence. So, Bruce, let me start with you. So what does the timing of all these events tell you?
Well, I mean, it's clearly everything that's going on is clearly linked to the election. There's no doubt about it. And you know, one thing we haven't mentioned, although Reid kind of hit on it a little bit, is that there's a lot of international attention on this. So if you've been dissatisfied with the way Nazarbayev has been leading the country, or if you're dissatisfied with the way the transition process is going, this is the time to move.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's why, for instance, on May 1st, when these impromptu demonstrations broke out, you know, in Nur Sultan and Almaty, the police kind of stayed back for a while and let it happen until it had gone on for a couple hours, because they don't want the images of people being dragged into vans, beaten with clubs, things like that. You know, it just makes the country look bad and brings into question the legitimacy of Tokayev when he finally is elected. So, you know, I mean, the protesters understand this. So do the authorities.
Yeah, definitely.
That this is the chance to get to do this.
Yeah, it's also a bad start for Tokayev if he indeed gets elected. Is there any slightest possibility that the result might end up otherwise?
No, I don't. I really don't see that. I mean, this is so managed that would be impossible. You know, the biggest question is what percentage of the vote is he going to get? You know, and what percentage of the vote will they allow, you know, the sole legitimate opposition figure, Amirjan Khosanov, to actually get too? You know, Tokayev will win, but with an overwhelming majority. You know, I wouldn't want to put a figure on it, but I mean, we're talking 70-80% probably at least. And the rest of the vote will be split between the other six candidates. But it'll be curious to see how much the sole opposition figure, the at least the only person you could identify as a legitimate opposition figure, would actually get. Will they try to make sure that his percentage is so low that no one has the idea that there's any popular opposition within the country, and therefore it's hopeless to even try to get behind these people? Or will they give him a little bit, you know, 5% or something, to show that, you know, there is an independent voice and there's some political space for conversation in the country?
Yeah. You know, talking about Amirjan Khosanov, right, and he's known a government critic. Why was he allowed to run?
I would describe this election as, you know, it's sort of a light or poorly implemented version of Russia's managed democracy. You know, they're trying to create some illusion that there is, you know, some competition that is happening here, so that you can't completely say, like in previous elections, you know, where Nazarbayev would run against candidates who said that they were voting for Nazarbayev. You know, so you can't sort of, so critics, whether domestic or international, when they call out this election, you know, can't basically be like, okay, you're just running unopposed in this stage managed election. It's supposed to create some illusion that Tokayev, when he does win, he ran against someone who was a rival, and that's supposed to lend him some legitimacy for you know, what we all assume is, you know, his pretty inevitable victory. And I think that's really all it is. I mean, I imagine Kosanov is not going to get a lot of official attention. I don't think that a lot of the big media organizations are going to talk about him at all here in Kazakhstan, anything that's state-run, anything on television, that which is how a lot of, you know, especially the older generation are consuming their media. So I think he'll be kind of cut out, but he's supposed to be on the ballot just for the sake that they can say that they have someone who's, you know, a real opposition figure on the ballot.
But he probably knows that, isn't it, Noin Kosanov, that authorities are using his name on the ballot. Then why even he's running for it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question I'd like to ask him. I'm hoping to get down to Almaty in the coming weeks, and hopefully I can tie up with him. I mean, my guess is, I mean, it's a tough bargain for people in his position. You either stay out of the process and you're completely cut out, or you can try to join this process, which you view as illegitimate, and still try to, you know, use it as a way to amplify your message and give more, you know, credence to this cause of having, you know, a real kind of democratic election. So,
Lila, there's a female candidate. On one hand, it is encouraging to see that a female candidate is running for this office. But on the other hand, people have some questions about whether she's a genuine competitor.
Yeah, so I'm a feminist, and like many people think that if there is a female candidate, so all feminists will vote for her. But of course, I think that this is not that straightforward. And this, as much as I know, the female candidate, she is not a feminist herself. Like in earlier interviews she gave, she said that leadership is mainly like a male thing, not a female one. And the party that, let's say, forced her to be a candidate, I guess that maybe she was just doing that things that she was ordered to do. And of course, in the current situation, it's understandable that it is not a question of whether she's going to be a president or not. She doesn't have this perspective at all. It is just, be the part of the game where you just represent your party, and this that you are female makes it the game spicier, you know, but actually doesn't change the dish at all. And talking about Amirjan Kosanov, he was telling that his party was planning, first of all, like initially to protest the elections, but after they thought that they can protest the elections anytime, you know, it's not a big deal, but maybe now they have the right time at least to try to be in the elections. And maybe all the activism that we have now, at least in Almaty and Astana mainly, but in other cities too, gave hope to Amirjan Kosanov and his colleagues that maybe in many years now there is at least a hope that something can happen, that now they should try.
Bruce, it will be interesting to see how the rest of the candidates will try to differentiate themselves from each other. I'm particularly interested about the path Kosanov will choose. You know, he's seemingly independent, perhaps a government critique, but there's a limit to what you can say about the government. What will you be looking at as the candidates, I believe, is going to kick off their debate, the real campaign next week?
Well, you know, to his credit, he's trying to show himself as a legitimate opposition candidate. He, on his Facebook page today, he posted criticism of the Kazakh authorities blocking all these websites today. So, I mean, he has come out as someone who's taking a stand against the actions of the government. You know, so that's definitely speaks, it lends credence to the belief that he is a true opposition figure. You know, again, you rightly mentioned that how much criticism would he be willing to make of the Kazakh authorities, and the answer is probably not a huge amount, because he would, there's all kinds of tricks that we've seen in the past, not necessarily in Kazakhstan, but in other countries where you can disqualify a candidate for a number of reasons. One, you know, he's had his signatures checked for his documents to file, but they could decide they were going to recheck that and find that, you know, 4,000 more were dubious or perhaps outright fakes and disqualify him from the election based on that. So, you know, he's walking a fine line, but he has come out shooting from the hip, as they say, and criticized the government's move to shut down the websites today. You know, I also wanted to mention, too, with the only female candidate, Dania Yaspaeva, it is significant that she's from one of the three parties that has seats in parliament. So it was. She's not from some other group that doesn't really have any hand on the power. Not that the Ak-Jol has a huge influence in the country, but at least they do have seats in parliament. So it was kind of a curious move that was the party that brought her forward. You know, and then we see some of these other people, you know, for instance, Amangildi Taspikov, for instance, is a union guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's the head of the unions out in western Kazakhstan. So clearly the authorities are trying to show that the unions, which have been a problem for Kazakhstan for a long time, going, you know, certainly back to Jean Ozen in 2011, you know, that they're paying lip service to this idea that these people also have their candidate out there. And the Communist People's Party of Kazakhstan, not to be confused with the original Communist Party of Kazakhstan, you know, they have a candidate. So if you're, a hardcore communist, older person with lived most of your life in the Soviet Union, the illusion is there that maybe you have a candidate that will speak up for your rights, too. So they've done something to kind of make a selection of candidates that hopefully, clearly, the authorities are hoping in society someone can find their candidate within this group of seven people somewhere and feel that maybe there's somebody that's representing them.
Mm-hmm. You know, these seven people currently on the ballot, their number might increase by the day when people will be listening to this podcast, because we are recording it today, which is Thursday, and I believe the registration ends by this weekend, I believe. So talking of Tokayev, just a very quick follow-up question, Bruce. He's clearly Nazarbayev's candidate, but is there anything Nazarbayev is doing to help him?
He spoke highly of him at the Nur-Otan Party Conference, where Tokayev was forwarded as the candidate. So, you know, it's well known that Nazarbayev supports him. I don't think Nazarbayev has to say anything more about this at all.
Okay.
And I wouldn't expect him to, as long as there's protests and rallies. I imagine the people that are supporting Tokayev and Nazarbayev's people have probably already taken a good look at the calendar, and they're thanking the powers that be that there are no more holidays between now and the elections, because May 1st and May 9th have just provided people an opportunity to come out and vent their displeasure with the way things are going. There is one more significant date, and that would be March 21st, because that's the anniversary of the protests over the land privatization deal. But that's not a holiday.
Yeah, kind of important reminder, nevertheless. Okay, so I guess we will continue talking about Kazakhstan in coming days. So let's end the discussion here. While doing so, let me take your view on one more point. So very briefly, Reid, on one hand, as we see, preparations for the elections are underway. On the other hand, growing protesters are taking the streets. So what will you be looking at as we move ahead in days to come?
I mean, for me, the most interesting thing I'm going to be following is how these, you know, the activists who have been coming out onto the streets, and so far, I think, been quite successful about getting their message, out into the country and out around the world. You know, how are they going to keep up this pressure? How are they going to continue to innovate? And then also, you know, how are the authorities going to respond? You know, so far, they haven't really shown any capability to adapt to this more, you know, savvy, more modern form of activism that is kind of starting to spring up in the country. And, you know, again, if this starts to be a harder crackdown, if this is more people getting put into prison, if it's the use of force, things like that, you know, I think that's the kind of thing that can galvanize more people and can could really backfire and, you know, start Tokayev's presidency on a pretty somber note. And, you know, I think it's an interesting thing at this moment in Kazakhstan, as we're in the middle of this. You know, I guess the Nazarbayev era is not fully over because he is still really controlling the country in many ways. But it's sort of the transition to the transition of the, you know, the end of his era in overseeing this country. And, you know, for most of that era, there's been a deference to authority in Kazakhstan. You know, it's quite rare for people to actually come out and protest in the way that they have been here. But that seems that deference has sort of gone away. And, you know, as that starts to slip away, you know, I can't imagine that's really going to come back. that's not something you can build out. It's sort of, there's inevitable changes coming here. It's how the government decides to deal in this election and in the coming years, I think will have a big determination about what that future of Kazakhstan will be.
Yeah. Bruce, just a very quick point. You know, Reed said, and whatever happens, changes are coming. And earlier, Leila said that regardless of the outcome, this won't be the same election. So what will you be looking at as we move ahead with this?
Both Leila and Reed are right on that. The authorities are clearly on the defensive here, and how much of this they're going to be able to let go for how long is going to be a real question. And will there be any hint from the Tokayev camp that they're willing to make some concessions or speak with some of these people who are expressing their dissatisfaction? Or are they going to simply ignore them and then, you know, order the police to come in and detain them when they get to be too much of a nuisance? That's going to be, for me, the real key is, are they going to make any attempt at all to engage with the people who are showing that they're not satisfied with the way things are going and the way this election and the campaign is taking place?
Okay, very brief note from Leila so that we end the discussion.
Yeah, so as I said, in a short term till the elections, we are really eager to be very active. And in these elections, this is not as much as about like results, but this is about the process. How we'll be involved, how we'll be like voting. Even the fact that more people will participate in these elections and more people will be actively engaged in watching the elections. So this is like a very huge leap for us as citizens of the country. In the long term, I think that this is a challenge, a call for us, for citizens of Kazakhstan, is to learn what is it to be a citizen. You know, we lived in an authoritarian country where nobody taught us what is it to be an active citizen, to be active in the politics, in the government, like, or to have this perspective to be elected in local government or in the country, you know. And I guess that in the long term, we should learn like how to vote, how to actively participate in politics, how to be citizens of the country. And of course, not only change the candidates that we'll have in further elections, but to change all the system, to reform all the system of like elections and of governing the country.
Leila, the way you speak, it makes me wonder whether you have a political rule in mind when the time is right in Kazakhstan.
There is a thing that it is fun that many friends of mine, they like say, okay, let's vote for you. But the thing is that personally, I do not have any political ambitions now, but it is really important for me to have this choice and to have this perspective that I can be elected or I can vote for the candidates that I want to vote.
Yeah,
this is, I guess, more important for me now, like in a broader sense.
Okay, terrific. Thank you, Leila Zulikha Mahmudova, political activist based in Almaty. Also, big thanks goes to Reed Standish, Nur-Sultan-based journalist working for foreign policy, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, Blok Ishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your thoughts and time today.
Thank you, Mohammed, for having us.
Thank you. It was great to have you. So this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.